Hello, I am Emma, the 11th Duchess of Rutland, and this is Duchess, a podcast in which I explore the most historic homes of the UK and meet the inspiring women who lead them. As a daughter of a Welsh farmer, I grew up far away from the glamour and wealth of aristocracy, but my life changed forever when I fell in love and married my husband, the 11th Duke of Rutland. Suddenly, one of Britain's most historic buildings was not only my home, but under my care. I wanted to hear the stories of other women like me, the custodians of these great homes. So in this podcast, I will travel to breathtaking homes and meet the inspiring women who lead these estates today. Please join me on this special journey. This is Duchess, the podcast. In the heart of Hertfordshire sits a historic stately home that's cultural impact has only grown with time, Knebworth House. Knebworth's Victorian High Gothic exterior, replete with turrets, gargoyles, domes, does little to tell the full story of this estate. A manor house has remained on the site of Knebworth since 1346, but the more grander estate was built in 1500. Consequently, Knebworth has remained in the same family for 500 years. The Lytons, now the Lytton Cobbles, have given the world a number of important cultural figures. The writer Edward Bulwer Lytton, the suffragette Constant Bulwer Lytton, among others. But today, Knebworth is best known for its electric music concerts. I sat down with the inspiring Honourable Martha Lytton Cobbold to learn more about the history of Knebworth, her role as managing director, and about one of the most important suffragettes to ever fight the cause. As a consequence of the UK lockdown, this episode was recorded remotely. Today, I am so excited to be joining Martha Lytton Cobbold.
Pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, Martha. And you live in the world famous Knebworth House. And I think I can see a very grand fireplace behind you right now. Which room are you in at Knebworth?
I am actually talking to you through our private dining room. And as you all know, these houses are quite on the cold side. So trying to get into a room that has good IT connectivity, as well as a little bit of warmth was the best choice. But it's a wonderful room, and it's one of my favourite places to be.
It looks magnificent. And what was it like for you, Martha? Because you came from America.
That's right.
From a very different world, marrying into this family.
That's right. I grew up in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, which is in the deep south of America. But interestingly, my family had known Henry's family since we were children. I met Henry when I was 11. And we have been lifetime family friends. Very pleased to say we've been married over 33 years. So coming into this family, I think I had an advantage. Not only was I marrying my best friend, but I was also coming into a family that I had known since I was a child.
Can you remember meeting Henry when you were 11?
Absolutely. He was 13, I was 11. So there's a couple of years between us. But saying that, coming from Alabama to help run the businesses and to help run the house was a different thing altogether. Our history in America is considerably younger. And whilst I grew up in an older house, one that my parents had restored, it dated back to 1850, which, of course, is nothing in a country like this. So to have that sort of history and that sort of lineage, that long-time family connection, was quite amazing and definitely a little bit daunting. but absolutely fascinating.
But you've always been very much a career woman, and we'll come on to that a little bit later. But your early career, just tell us a little bit about that, Martha, before you married.
So I worked in publishing, really, from a very early age, and then into advertising and editorial work. Both of my parents were entrepreneurial business people. My father, a newspaper publisher, and still is in his mid-80s. My mother worked in the antiques and the art world and created an antiques magazine, which is how we met Henry's parents. And they had a philosophy that we needed to either go to summer school or have a summer job. Worked really from a very young age. I was the youngest of three, and putting my hands into a business and getting involved came to me as second nature.
You're also, if I'm correct, you head of the Historic Houses Association.
Yes, as of last week, I took on the presidency of the Historic Houses Association.
And just for our listeners, Martha, would you mind just telling them what is the HHA?
Absolutely. The Historic House Association is a fantastic collective, really, of about 1,600 privately owned and managed stately homes and castles across Great Britain. As an association, we can work together and try to support the owners like yourself and us here to do the best we can and to be as sustainable as we can and to just move forward with retaining these glorious properties and making them better for the next generation.
I so remember, Martha, arriving on a hill about 4 miles away from Beaver and seeing this extraordinary building sort of staring at me. Can you tell me two things now? Firstly, your first impression of Nebworth all those years ago when you were that little girl. And secondly, tell me about the architecture.
Well, the house has always had an extraordinary magistrate about it. Its turrets and battlements and high Gothic Victoriana makes it quite awe-inspiring. And it's still today when I see it. It still is a breathtaking beauty on the hill. And similar to you, coming up to see it, it's just awe-inspiring and makes you want to dream and makes you want to aspire to whatever it is that you're planning to go forward with or to make things that much better.
So your family have been at Nebworth House. Just tell me, for how long?
Well, the Littons have been here at Nebworth for close to 500 years. So Henry and myself are the 19th generation to be here, to raise our family, to live in it as our family home, but also to work with it to make it survive and to retain it. It's a much more complicated situation than it was 500 years ago. It really has to work for itself.
Yeah, has to sing for its supper. Out of interest, I always think it's important to know, what are the running costs of living at Nebworth for a year?
The oil alone for the heating is about $25,000 a year. So you start adding things on, and that's with us keeping it around 10 degrees. So when I said this was one of the warmer rooms, you can imagine it fluctuates.
Goodness. So Martha, if I may, I'd like to now go forward and talk about Sir Edward Bulwer Lytton. Could you briefly tell us of his history?
Sure. He was the most prolific writer of the family and quite an extraordinary politician and statesman. And he produced the most extraordinary amount of writing, over 12 plays, and multitude of novels and essays and pamphlets and poetry and political statements and white papers. It just was extraordinary. His playwriting brought him into the friendship and the world with Charles Dickens. They were great supporters of many people in the arts. So they created the Guild of Literature and Arts, and that was to support other writers, actors, and producers within the literary and the theatrical arts world. They built houses in Stevenage, a nearby town, to offer free of charge housing and subsidized living accommodation to support those in the arts. And also helped one another.
So one of the things that struck me when I was reading about you and your family and your husband, Martha, was reading about this extraordinary lady who I would have adored to have met. Will you tell me about Constance and the journey of her life?
Lady Constance was a fascinating person. She was a very accomplished woman, very able and quite a keen writer herself. We spoke about writing earlier. All of the Lyttons seemed to be very, very able writers and literarians, if that's a word. But Constance was one that was a great believer in supporting people. She supported people of all walks of life and was particularly interested in women. Found it annoying, to say the least, that women were not allowed to own property. And in particular, once they married, that their property went into the hands of their spouse. She was disenfranchised with how women in service were treated and started looking further. It really became a labor of love with the vote. And so that she felt that that was something that she could do that would help women of all walks of life if they were allowed to vote and allowed to have a greater say in not only the law of the land, but also the retention of their own property, that would be a helpful way to go. And I don't think she fully intended to become a suffragette when she first started looking into these areas, but she found very quickly that she could make a difference. And not only could she make a difference through her writing and her organization and her connections, but also by using her name and using her position in society, she found that a greater exposure could be obtained. This also then became to be a bit of a problem for her, because she found very quickly that as Lady Constance Lytton, the brother of Victor, who was a Member of Parliament, sitting in the House of Lords, that she was very quickly dismissed. And so she decided that if she took on a different persona and she started calling herself Jane Wharton and dressed as a seamstress, that she would be taken a little more seriously and not just put away to the side and asked to go back to her tea party. This enabled her not only to raise more issues, it also meant that she could work with everybody at every level with these two personas going parallel. She was arrested and she was put in prison on a number of occasions. She found that if she was arrested initially as Lady Constance, that she was immediately let out of prison and not treated the same, whereas as Jane Wharton, she was treated as the other women. And this was a real eye-opener because they were not treated well at all. They were treated with great denigration. They were treated with complete inhumanity. The force feeding was appalling. They were not checked properly for their medical history or for their health or their welfare, for that matter. The treatment that she received in prison did affect her health immensely. She suffered a series of strokes and she had heart problems for the rest of her life and was paralyzed halfway down her body on one side. But she never gave up, and she continued to fight the cause. She continued to write and support the cause. She wrote a book called Prisons and Prisoners, which highlighted how people were treated in prison, and in particular, how women were treated in prison. That brought about a big change. And so women then were treated as political prisoners, as opposed to just being thrown away without any regard for their health or welfare. And so making these changes were really a phenomenal thing to do. But most importantly, she was able to raise the cause of women to ensure that we had the vote. And this is something that we feel very strongly about in our family. And I'm delighted once a year that there's a group of ladies who wish to come and honor Lady Constance. And so I will meet them and we open up the garden around the family mausoleum where she's entombed and read the inscription of her memorial and talk about what has happened over the last 100 years, 150 years, and where we are now. Because still there are struggles. There still are things that need to be addressed so that women are treated more equitably. We mentioned the Historic House Association, and I'm delighted to be the first woman president of that association, but I won't be the last. And I'm pleased that we've broken that glass ceiling, and I hope that there will be many more women who will come forward through our board and come forward through these associations to get that equality working across the board.
That really reminds me of our new president in America, and his second lady in command said exactly that line, didn't she?
Yes, she did, Kamala.
I won't be the last. And well done you for leading the way into, I suppose, yet another at times dusty institution, but you're raking off the dust sheets and bringing it to the 21st century. So wonderful. How would you say, Martha, the role of women has evolved over your time at Nebworth?
Well, I think it's constantly evolving, and it's an interesting thing. As I said, the house has passed through the female line quite a few times, and most recently to me, it passed through my husband's grandmother, Lady Hermione. And Lady Hermione said to me at the time, and she was in her 90s at this point, she said to me at the time over a cup of tea, she said, "You know, dear, the thing that you need to realize as taking this on as a woman and coming from another country is that many people will believe that what you are doing isn't correct." And I was there myself, and it's important to think about your decisions, but make them and stick to them and work through them. To have that blessing really helped immensely.
I know exactly what you mean. I was very, very lucky. I had a very great aunt who was the older sister of my father-in-law. And she sounds of a similar ilk, but more dramatic. Mm. She would throw her arms up in the air and say, "Darling girl, just get on. You're doing a wonderful job." But I know what you mean. Having the family themselves encourage and support you in what can be an incredibly lonely job where you only really have yourself to question and talk through your decisions and your choices. Because like me, Martha, you run Nebworth as the CEO, that's correct?
That's right.
I found the whole journey of coming from a completely different world into aristocracy, if I'm honest and I think back, incredibly daunting, because no, I wasn't like you. I don't have your brain power, Martha.
I think you do.
You know, I failed opera singer. I failed at being a land agent. I then set up my own business at 25, and it was sort of plodding along, rather. So I can understand totally why the trustees and the board struggled with me, and I would come out with sort of rather crass comments that they felt were unfounded. And what did I can remember them saying again and again, "What do you know?" And you have to pinch yourself really when the young of today come forward with ideas, because you have to keep reminding yourself how it was for you. And to support, the main thing is the energy and the devoted commitment that we give to these places, and hopefully the wisdom. And if we're grounded about our decisions and not foolhardy, I hope we are doing the best in our ability to keep this heritage together.
I kind of think it's helpful coming in from a completely different background and coming in again as a woman and as the wife of the owner manager to have a go at it, because people do, as Lady Hermione warned me, they do expect you to make the wrong decision. They do expect you to potentially fail. So you can only do one thing, which is to go up and to succeed. And I quite like a challenge, and I quite like trying to disprove a situation, or if someone has put the gauntlet down, to rise to that challenge and go for it. But by all means, I'm constantly learning. And I absolutely have put a foot wrong. I've mispronounced names before. I've mispronounced titles and towns before. And perhaps I may have been a little bit too ballsy or too forward before, which wasn't necessarily in keeping with someone in my situation or position. But on the other hand, I would like to think that I always do so with the utmost of respect, with genuine interest and a real passion for what I'm doing. And you have to have thick skin, but that doesn't mean that, you know, you don't get a punch back or a kick back on occasion. But, you know, like you just go for it. And I just try like you have and others have done.
And we're in a sort of club, Martha, irrespective of the HHA,
you and I sort of only we would know what goes on behind the doors and the walls of these houses. And although we try our very best to make it appear seamless, there's always a leaky roof here or an issue with, you know, a ceiling or a window, or who do we find to do all these wonderful craftsman jobs here in the 21st century when so many crafts have been lost. So we're in a very similar club, and we're very reliant on the team of people around us really who support us. And you're only actually as good as the person who turned on this to make it happen today. Otherwise, I would have been hopeless.
Yeah, I quite agree. We have to have our team. We have to have our colleagues around us to make these things work.
I can only imagine how much pride Constance would have today with such an intellectual and inspiring woman taking the reins of Knebworth House. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast presented by me, Emma Rutland, and produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. I am spellbound each day by Beaver, but nothing can compare with the spine-tingling magic of experiencing this place for yourself. So I've decided to set up a number of Duchess days, when if you join me, you will be my personal guest for a behind-the-scenes tours of just about all you can see here at this castle. Staterooms, including the Regent's Gallery, the Elizabeth Saloon, all inspired by Versailles, the ballroom, the old kitchen, the armory, and the behind-the-scenes. Plus, a tour on wheels of the Capability Brown Extensive Park. Woven into all this, I can promise you, you will have a delicious lunch, during which we can talk about the nuts and bolts of living in England's most romantic, but at times very impractical castle. Times being what they are, just now, I'm only penciling in two dates, one this year on June the 25th, and one in September. But do let me know if you'd like to join my provisional invitation list, and I'll get in touch once I'm confident I can make the confirmed arrangements, strictly observing the COVID rules of the day. If you are interested, look at Duchess Days below in the below link. Martha has such a wonderful grasp on the importance of heritage and the history of Knebworth, but I wanted to learn more about its recent history and the music concerts that have made this estate such an iconic place today.
Knebworth now, of course, is still incredibly involved with the arts, with its famous concerts, literally millions. Come to you. Tell us about this and tell us about some of your favourite memories.
Well, the concert started in 1974, and it was one of the extraordinary things that my parents-in-law managed to accomplish in trying to open the house in the park and to make it the leisure attraction and to build the brand heritage that we have today. Rather comically, it came about as an inquiry for a Renaissance fair. What it then evolved into was a full-blown pop concert. And we've held over 30 concerts over this period of time. They're of a variety of size, going up to 125,000 a day, which we did 3 days after Robbie Williams. 375,000 people came through. And we've had artists here such as Genesis. We've had the Queen concert here, the last Queen concert where Freddie Mercury was able to perform, the last of the Led Zeppelin concerts, and Pink Floyd have played here, Soul to Soul, and Gary Numan, and Metallica, and Iron Maiden, quite an array of artists. Mick Jagger even spent the night here when the Stones were playing.
And if I'm right, there's something interesting in your archives that Mick Jagger left behind.
Yes, my mother-in-law found a rather small pair of bright red pants at the bottom of the bed, which she carefully took and dropped into an envelope and dropped into the safe, thinking that was something probably worth holding on to. And so we do have a rather odd assortment of things that gets left here. But it was wonderful to have him here. You know, when we had the Chili Peppers play here, the Red Hot Chili Peppers played here a few years ago, we were fascinated by the artist's interest in the architecture and interest in the building itself. And to see Flea jump up on stage just before going into one of his classic songs and saying, "This one's for Edward Bulwer-Lytton." It's just fantastic to see how you get that heritage and everything comes full circle. But it does resonate. It does connect with them. Knebworth, you know, it with its spires and turrets, with its amazing gargoyles, and there's so many connections that come through. And Edward Bulwer-Lytton was fascinated with life after death and even the occult, and held seances and various other things, trying to connect on different levels. Music is something that we all connect with and brings these things together. And I think if you look back at some of the origins of rock and roll, and you look at metal itself as heavy rock music, it does connect. And with the natural amphitheater and with our love of the arts and wanting to support the arts and believing very much in holding events and enabling people to come together to experience them, I would say, yes, it possibly does have that natural connection. But I'm sure you will find the same with Beaver and with all these other beautiful heritage properties. Sometimes they were built on hills, sometimes they were built in valleys, but they were always built to gather people. And they were built for people to come together and to enjoy, have group experiences. And they weren't built for a single family or just even two people to be in them. They come alive when people are there. And we love to see it with the events. We love to see people coming in and having the visitors here. And it does bring a life back into it, and it does awaken that spirituality. And long may it continue.
What a great history. And that's why a lockdown is so difficult, Martha, isn't it? Because we have lived our lives sharing every corner with people.
Absolutely.
And people often say, how do you find it? Well, it's been very lonely, and lots of dusty, cobwebbed rooms, dusted over sheets. A bit like, I would imagine, how these houses were shut down during wartime.
Yes.
And I just forgot about great areas and thought, well, there's no point in going there. Just forget it. We just had to concentrate with the immediacy of keeping it together. How do you manage, Martha? Because I believe you have fabulous gardens that surround Knebworth. How do you manage to preserve and keep these gardens?
Well, I think like so many of us, we work on a very limited resource. And the gardens of Knebworth, really in their heyday, had 40 to 50 gardeners working with them. Post-World War II, this went right down to three. We have four full-time gardeners now, but we also have some fantastic casuals and students and volunteers who help us during the summer. But the garden has been simplified, and that was one of the tasks which Sir Edwin Lutyens took on in trying to simplify the garden to make them more manageable, but still really beautiful.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. I think we had 60 after the Second World War, and now we have one, actually. Some people visiting the gardens would say we can see that, but I have been busy out in the gardens. I'm sure you have in lockdown, and it's been great getting stuck in, because you can go through a border, know exactly how long it takes to weed, and we're busy doing a whole replanting plan at the moment. So, yeah, lockdown has had its advantages, because you do get out there and see every little nook and cranny, don't you?
Absolutely. And as a family, we've never more than now jumped in and jumped on board and helped and done absolutely a little bit of everything, if not a lot of everything, to make it all work and to reopen.
Yeah, we know that one well. And you have a very impressive, I believe, collection of armor.
Yes, we do. We have a wonderful collection of armor and some ancient armory. Again, this is something that Edward Bulwer-Lytton rebuilt, with pieces going back, you know, to the early dateline of Knebworth House. It is something that our family has also enjoyed, and my own son has been fascinated from a very early age with the armor and with the ancient weaponry. And we've had some comical moments over his childhood, and he's now fully grown. But as a child, he loved nothing more than going through the attics and finding old swords and breastplates and polishing them up, but was very protective of them. and kept them under his bed until an au pair was horrified and came to see me in the estate office and said, I don't think it's quite a good idea for a young boy to have swords, actually real swords, under his bed. I said, well, he does appreciate them for what they are, and he is actually restoring them. And as long as he's not playing with them with the other children, I think we'll be all right.
Wonderful. So I've had five children, and I can well remember the challenge of lifting the pram down the spiral stairs, because Beaver's built very much on a hill and there's no garden that you can walk out to. What were your memories, Martha, of childhood and bringing children up at Knebworth?
Well, my children are grown up now, but it was wonderful to be able to move back and have them grow up here, and to feel a part of the history and the living history of a property like Knebworth House and Knebworth Park. And when we first moved back, we did not live in the main house. We lived within the estate, within the deer park, but it was walking distance. And we spent a lot of time here visiting my parents-in-law, but also helping and taking part in many of the activities that were underway. The challenges, I would say, would be really from a mother's perspective of keeping them safe. We're very open here, and there aren't that many private areas, and I very much wanted them to have as normal a childhood as possible. But at the same token, recognizing where we live and the family that we represent, that I wanted to ensure their safety. So I did keep them back from the media. I kept them out of the public eye, or would let them enter into a public environment, but without anyone really knowing who they were, so that they could play, they could climb a tree, they could walk their dogs, they could ride their bicycles, sometimes through the house, but at the same token, feel that it was a lived-in house and that they could enjoy the house and the property and learning about the art and the ancient weaponry and the armor without a fear of it.
I couldn't agree more. I think one of my favorite memories, Martha, would be Violet running. They had a little shop that they put outside the ice cream shop, and Alice and Violet used to sell ice creams to the public, but they weren't very good at maths, and so Alice insisted they had to charge a pound for the cone and a pound for the ice cream scoop. And so there was a big sisterly debate going on about how to charge for the ice cream.
Very enterprising.
But it is all about getting your hands up in and getting involved, because it is the life we live. And
absolutely.
It may not be normal to many families, but it is our life, growing up with people being around. And as you rightly say, a huge challenge is the idea of keeping them safe. Mm. And so I did here at Beaver put up lots of screens so they couldn't come into our private area. Mm. It just gave me peace of mind, because we were young mums, weren't we? And they were little children.
Yeah.
I guess yours were small as well, like mine. And it was a worry.
It is. And it's a challenge as well when you, like me, we're working and very hands-on with our businesses. And so it's trying to make sure that they feel that family warmth and connectivity, but also learn from us and get stuck in. And like your daughters, mine ran a lemonade stand at the Oasis concert. So it's the same sort of principle and ideology of getting stuck in and getting engaged and working with it.
Martha, you have been the most inspiring lady to speak to today. I have one last question, if I may.
Of course.
Put to you on this November morning. If you were sitting in that chair now, looking at the portraits that look back at you and the women from the past, what would you say to six generations in the past?
I would say believe in what you want to achieve and find a way to make it happen. I think it would have been more difficult for them to, as a woman at that time, to make as big a difference as we're able to do now. I know they had ways and means to do so, and obviously the intelligence, but not always the ability. So I would say, believe in it and carry on and don't give up.
And to six generations in the future?
I would say, believe in yourself, make a plan and get on with it, because they're very able and do have that opportunity. And it will take hard work and it will take graft, but they can do it and they should carry on.
They can do it. And I'd just like to say one thing.
Yes.
I'd like to raise my glass to Constance, because I don't think any of us would be here today without her bravery.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's a very important thing to recognize and to ensure that we do exercise our right to vote and make sure we participate in politics and raise our voice when things are not correct and ensure that we do make a road not only for ourselves, but for those coming forward in the future. You're absolutely right. Well said.
Thank you for today, Martha. And well done with all your hard work at NEBWA.
Thank you so much.
Something Martha said that really resonated with me was that these stately homes are built to gather people. I couldn't agree more. I always say in these homes, you are in co-ownership with the surrounding community. It has been an absolute delight to hear the fascinating history of Nebworth and gain an understanding of the immense cultural impact this home continues to have today. So thank you, Martha, for that. But most of all, thank you, Martha, for continuing the tradition of being a trailblazing woman in heritage, following the path of your predecessor, Constance. Next week on Duchess, I will be speaking to Catherine Maxwell Stewart, laird of the amazing Traquair House. Catherine reveals Traquair royal pedigree, why the manor is known as the romantic house of lost causes, and we learn why Traquair's famous gates have remained closed for so long. Until then, keep safe and see you next week. Couple of quick notes before we go. Important ones. Make sure you subscribe to Duchess the podcast so you get automatically notified about new episodes wherever you listen to a podcast. I want to know about you and what you think of the show, so please be sure to send me your comments and tell me about your own lineage and the women who have inspired you in your life. Please write to me on duchess@duchessthepodcast.com. And if there are any stately homes in particular you'd like me to visit, do send your suggestions to me as soon as possible. I've started a newsletter that includes all this and more and comes straight to your inbox. It's really easy to sign up at duchessthepodcast.com. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast, presented by me, Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. From Beaver Castle, Lady Violet Manners is the executive producer. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kasra Ferruzia is the audio and visual engineer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Additional creative support from Selena Christofis and Theo Banner. Thanks for listening to Duchess, the podcast.